All right, we've got a special Tuesday edition of Side Retired because there's some breaking news inside the baseball world. It's Dylan, Nico, and we're going to be joined by a special guest. So let's get into this. Hello and welcome to this edition of Side Retired. It's Dylan Campione, Nico Fernandez, and today a very special guest is joining us on the podcast because it is Tuesday, April 16th. I know we didn't give you your normal Monday scheduled episode because we gave you an episode over the weekend. We're in the weird college baseball season, so our Monday, Wednesday, Friday remains flexible as always, but we're still promising you at least 2 to 3 episodes a week as always. But it's Dylan, it's Nico, and with the breaking news that John Sterling has retired, it is time to bring on our Yankees enthusiast. And no, we're not referring to Henry Kalani, who is studying, I believe he said, an exam tonight. Good luck, yeah. Henry. But we needed the Yankee fan perspective, and James is coming off of being named the player of the week in his conference. So a little claps there, and deservedly the day off for James. We've got David Halpern with us. What's up, brother?
I'm doing well, doing well.
Awesome. Well, we've got a great episode today, and obviously we're going to talk about Sterling. David's going to give us his hot takes on the season so far, since this is David's first episode in the regular season. And then Nico and I will go around the league with some of the other interesting topics. But let's start with the headliner, John Sterling. The voice that Nico and I grew up hating, and the voice that David, you grew up listening to. We'll let the Yankee fan give his take first. What was the thought process when John Sterling retired today?
When I found out about the news, I was quite surprised of the reasoning behind why he's retiring. He is, without a question, one of the greatest of all time when it comes to announcing MLB games. On the radio, no matter what it is, he always finds a way to announce the games, to get to Yankee Stadium, wherever the game is. He does such a great job, not only just calling the game, but if you listen to how he call home runs for many different Yankee players over the years, from the captain, Derek Jeter, to the new captain, Aaron Judge, every different player who played for the Yankees over the years, his most iconic calls were specifically for home runs. And his mind is so creative when it comes to that. He is the expert of making home run calls some of the best you'll ever hear. And that will be one of the best things that will be missed about John Sterling. He's also one of the most longest reigning MLB radio announcers over the past many decades, 36 years.
Yep, you got
like it. So he deserved his flowers. He definitely deserves his flowers for a very successful career, and he will dearly be missed when retired.
And I think the key to that, and obviously John Sterling is 85 years old, so you mentioned that it was a little unexpected. I know entering this season, people were thinking John Sterling's not coming back. Last year, he already got rid of some of the road games, but he said he wanted to come back strong. Apparently, he's been sick over the last couple of weeks or so, but Michael Kay is saying that is not the reason he's retiring, and he's just 85 years old, and he's realizing that since being home over the last week, he doesn't want to commute to the Bronx for an hour every single day, and deservedly so when you're 85 years old. So I think it's a little interesting that it happened so suddenly, in that it was announced today that's effective immediately. I think when I initially saw the news, I expected him to call Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and those would be his last games. But I think we're focusing on the wrong aspect of this if we're going into the minute details in that front. I think John Sterling, whether you're a Red Sox fan who heard him call every single Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera moment of all time, except for the Aaron Boone home run, that is the only play that people remember in Yankee history over the last 40 years that John Sterling was not on the microphone for. But whether it's that, whether it's a Judge home run, whether it's an A-bomb from A-Rod, or don't you know it's Robinson Cano or Mark Teixeira or anything like that, you think of John Sterling's home run call. And it will be different. Justin Shackle, great guy. Shout out to friend of the podcast, Emmanuel Barbari. It seems like he might be getting a shot inside the Yankees booth now as well, along with Susan Waldman. So a lot of interesting things happening for the Yankees. But I think you're right, David, in saying love him or hate him, John Sterling is the voice of the Yankees. No disrespect to Michael Kay. John Sterling, hopefully he gets his plaque in the Hall of Fame before, you know, he's 85 years old. So we'll see what happens on
and
that.
And maybe someday, there will be a part of Yankee Stadium named after him.
I'll make the prediction
I feel like he deserves it.
I wouldn't be stunned if on Saturday they announced that the radio broadcast booth is going to be renamed to the John Sterling broadcast booth. But
I think that would be a perfect idea.
But Nico looks depressed right now. So Nico, your thoughts on John Sterling?
I mean, I'm literally like, while we're talking about this, just roaming and like into my mind. And I feel like every single time I have a disappointing Red Sox Yankees moment, John Sterling's voice pops into my head. I feel like every single time I would hear that LeMahieu would have another RBI single or another RBI double against the Red Sox, it was John Sterling's voice in my head saying it. And I think that's the mark of a true like veteran and a true like Hall of Fame guy when you're talking about broadcasting. The fact that I can just hear his voice and hear the things that he would talk about is just a mark. Like, I really only think about the guys that I listened to growing up, Vin Scully and him, because it's just so iconic. So again, it was a great career. Again, a lot of moments that I wish I didn't have to hear from him, because it was a lot of the Yankees being the Red Sox that I remember. But again, a great career and definitely one to be remembered by. And it's like you said, it's one of those things that we hated hearing him, but at the same time, we respected him so much.
So David, on that note, one of the iconic moments of the podcast by far, in fact, it might be the best moment on the podcast, was we had Paul Severino, friend of the podcast, on the show, and he gave us a live home run call of Nico Fernandez hitting a home run. It's now the opposite in that we're not tributing to Nico. We're tributing to John Sterling. So as the Yankee fan, I ask, can you give us your home run call of your favorite John Sterling home run?
If I have to put my top three...
No, not... I'm not saying list them. I'm saying David Hoppert is on the mic impersonating, and you're going to go, and the 3-2 pitch to blah, blah, blah is then go into the home run call. So first off,
I'll do my bat
and take it away.
First one. Here is the 3-2, the Gardner. The pitch is swung on and hit in the air to deep right. It is high. It is far. It is gone. A home run for Brett Gardner. Let the Gardy party begin. Brett Gardner makes it a 1-0 lead.
That's a 10 out of 10. Electric. Hey, we might have the new John Sterling.
And it just goes to like, you did it perfectly. It goes back to like what I was saying. Like that 3-2, it is far. It's like just came to my mind. Like you remember that iconic lines from him, and it's why we're going to remember him like for so many years to come.
I want one more.
And one more. 1-0 swung on and hit in the air to deep center. It is high, it is far, it is gone. All rise. Here comes the judge. It's judgment day. Aaron Judge with a home run to center, and the game is tied at 3.
Let's see, like that's the thing, like those phrases, and I might reach out to Emmanuel tonight and say, like, so do you keep going with those, or like, do those now die with John Sterling? But it'll be interesting to see, because the first time, because it's going to happen that someone hits a home run on the weekend and it's going to be like, well, it's a home run for the Yankees and they take a 1-0 lead, versus like, who knows if Emmanuel Barbari's got a phrase or Justin Shackle's got a phrase, or maybe even Susan Waldman's going to take a play-by-play for a little bit. Probably not, but we'll see. So it's going to be a transition period if you're a Yankee fan. You've already gotten used to Shackle and Barbari, and obviously you've known Susan for decades. But yes, I think when Yankee fans are like, oh, I think Ryan Rucco as well, when he's on the TV side of things, where it's like, we love when they fill in, but it's definitely going to be weird knowing that this isn't a fill-in. John's not coming back the next homestand. But we digress. And with David on the podcast with us today, as we mentioned, his first time on for the regular season, and as per usual with our Monday and Tuesday episodes, it's time to play the fun game that Nico and I have butchered every single week, but we've got it now, and it's called It's Not a Big Deal, But... And we say our phrase. So, David, you've come prepared with five phrases that you'd like to bring to the table. So start off with number one. What's the phrase? It's not a big deal.
This is why we butcher it, because it's like we go and we say it, and then like 5 seconds later, we're like, what was the phrase?
Because we don't want to rip off McAfee. So shout out Pat McAfee for the greatest phrase of this of all time. But we've got it's not a big deal, but. So, David, tell us number one. It's not a big deal, but.
It's not a big deal, but. Luis Castillo of the Seattle Mariners is right now the biggest disappointment of that team. He is pitching very badly, and I fear at some point they might have to send him down to AAA.
Okay, I'll take a stab at it. I am a little nervous. I will not get you wrong. Through his first four starts, he's 0-4 with a 6 ERA. He's given up the most hits in the league of 32 and 21 innings pitched, as well as he's faced the most batters in those possible innings at 99. His FIP is at a 3.11, which does give a little bit of encouragement that he's running in some bad luck. And I will say, despite the high amount of hits, which is 32, he's given up only 4 walks in 21 innings, which is definitely reasonable. And I think at the end of the day, I'm going to claim it's going to be bad ball luck right now because it is only 4 starts. And as I just mentioned, his FIP is 2 runs lower than his ERA. Now, I do think you're right in saying that Castillo is what makes the Mariners go, and that he's going to need to be the normal Castillo ace. In fact, I think someone on the show, I don't think it was us, predicted him to be a Cy Young finalist, but the Mariners go with him. His breaking ball has still been solid this year. His walk percentage, as we mentioned, is really good. It's just his fastball hasn't been elite yet, and that's why it's getting hit. But I think 4 starts, so I agree with the take. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I think that, again, I think that Castillo is going to be fine. I think he's going to be all right. What is getting me nervous is, even if you just broaden it, I think the Mariners' rotation hasn't been as good as they thought it was going to be. Kirby hasn't looked anything special after his big year last year. Castillo has looked bad. And I think the big thing is, yeah, we can think these guys are going to be fine. But especially when we talk about what their hopes were, they can't afford for Castillo and Kirby to get going in June. They just can't. They're going to be in way too big of a hole. I mean, you've seen it. I mean, right now, I think, what are they? They're 6-10 right now. Like, that's not going to be able to hold in a division that, you know, the Astros are going to get going once some guys get healthy. The Rangers are always going to be good. And maybe the Angels, again, for the first couple months, they always seem to win games and they'll be average and then they'll suck for the second half. But you just can't afford to be this bad at the start, especially when your team is so predicated on your pitching being dominant. We talked about the reason that I had high expectations for this year. And the reason I did was because that pitching was just so good. But we've seen what happens when your pitching is not good and your whole thing is around pitching, you're not going to be able to survive. Again, it also doesn't help that Julio Rodriguez is right now hitting 140 with like one home run. He's going to get going. But again, when the two big things of why are the Mariners going to be successful were that three-headed monster of Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert, and George Kirby being dominant, and Julio Rodriguez maybe winning an MVP this year, and neither of those, you're in a bad spot. One of them, of those four, at least two of them got to get going. Because I think if this stays until June, I think that the West is just going to be way too tough for them to dig out of that hole.
Great question, David. Question number two. I don't want to overreact, but...
Got it wrong. It's not a big deal.
It's not a big deal, but...
It's not a big deal, but the A's will end the season as a 500 team, but when people talk about them, it will be for the wrong reasons. You look at the A's right now, and you realize they've been winning games. They've been really, really good, but when people are going to their games, you know exactly what they're chanting.
Sell the team.
Exactly. They're not really there for the games. They're there because their owner, you know, he should. They are so good right now that they need to play in Oakland. They're back to playing at a pretty solid level. They need to be playing back in the Oakland Coliseum. They should get rid of the deal.
Nico's going to get upset with me with this one, but the A's haven't played great teams yet this year that much. You've got a series against the Red Sox that they got swept in, which I think tells you all, like, Red Sox are a good, not elite team, but they're a good team. So to get swept out of Boston at home, 9-0, 5-4, 1-0, shows that the A's offense cannot hit. They then lost 3 out of 4 to Cleveland. And the only series they've won is they beat the Tigers, beat the Nationals, and then had a fluky win against the Rangers. So, and they're still under 500 right now. I don't see a world where these A's, especially with 13 games coming up against the Astros throughout the rest of the season, another 10 against the Rangers, another 13 against the Mariners, all the rest of the games coming up. I don't see a world that the A's are top 9 in the American League, which is, I think, what you'd probably need to be in order to be a 500 team. So I love the sentiment, but I would fully get behind if the take was that the A's don't finish in last. But 500 is a little too far for me at this point.
Yeah. Well, think of it. The Astros are not really doing that well either, and they're getting older. And some of the teams that made the postseason last year, they're struggling to start. What if they don't get going?
Are you making the bold prediction that the Oakland A's will finish better than the Houston Astros?
I'm not sure.
I want to guess it. I want to.
You know what? I'm gonna, that question. I think yes, because the Astros, the Astros are nothing but old. They're old. Like, I don't want them in the playoffs. And if the Athletics are the team to finish with a better record than the Astros, be my guest. I don't care.
I want you to put it in a sentence. The Oakland A's will have more wins than the Houston Astros in 2024.
Fine. I believe the Athletics will have slightly more wins, maybe 10 more wins than the Astros in this year. I say 10 more wins.
H-Town Wheelhouse, that's for you, buddy.
I think the bigger thing, which is, like, you've kind of alluded to it a little, I think the ownership is just, like, this is a big deal when you talk about the ownership. The fact of the Estuary Ruiz situation is just terrible. I mean, when you look at a team that
had
bright spots, the couple bright spots of 2023 were kind of like, hey, your all-star was Brent Rooker. He's on the bench. You had a guy who had 50 stolen bases in Estuary Ruiz. He's in AAA after his first series hitting, like, having a 1,200 OPS. Paul Blackburn's been phenomenal, and I think that's helped a little bit on their wins. I believe he hasn't allowed a run yet. I think he broke the record in franchise history for longest scoreless streak to start a season. So he looks great. I don't think, like, I'm going to have to agree with Dylan. I don't think that they're a 500 team. But again, I think the biggest thing is, I think especially earlier, like when we talk about, like, the middle of the 2010s, there was kind of this sentiment where it was like, okay, they couldn't afford, it was like, again, with the money bond things, oh, they can't afford these players, but they're always trying to get the most out of what they got. And the thing that gets me upset is it doesn't feel like they're doing that anymore. It doesn't feel like they're going, hey, we're developing Donaldson, we're developing Olsen, we're developing all these guys, and once they're up, we're going to have a nice, like, 4-year window, and we understand we're not going to be able to pay them, but in those 4 years, we're going to compete. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore, because it doesn't seem like they're really trying to compete, and that's where I would agree with you. The ownership has just been an utter debacle.
Number 3, David, it's not a big deal, but...
It's not a big deal... But the Pittsburgh Pirates are for real. They'll be a postseason team at the end of the year.
So, I'm going to have a hard time of selling on that one, because the Pittsburgh Pirates just got miserably beaten by the New York Mets today.
But I thought the Mets were a great team.
They are a great team.
I'm going to say I don't hate this one. I think that especially with how the NL Central is, the NL Central seems like it's going to be a dogfight till the end of the year. The big question is, are the Pirates going to be like the Reds of last year, where it's like, hey, we've got a lot of good pieces and a lot of special pieces of guys that can develop in O'Neill Cruz, Jared Jones, Cabrian Hayes maybe hitting his stride. Paul Skeens is in the pipeline. Brian Reynolds just got signed to the big contract. Can we put these together and make a playoff push? Especially when it's like, yes, the Brewers have looked great, but at the end of the day, how much, when it gets to the dog days of summer, how much is the loss of Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns going to affect them when it's not just Freddie Peralta? The Cardinals, maybe they get going. I don't think that'll happen. And my one of my hot takes for the year is going to look terrible. Shohei Imanaga with the Cubs looks great. And they look like, again, it's like they seem like the same team as last year. And they added an ace. They added another guy, which looks phenomenal. And then Justin Steele is going to come back for them. And then the Reds, like what I just talked about, they seem to have a nice little young core. Ellie seems to have gotten going. I think he had five home runs in four games, which was like just phenomenal with an inside the park home run. You've got a lot of special teams. So I think the big thing is, one thing where I'll agree is the Pirates look good. The big question is, are they going to be able to build on that this year? And even more, are they going to be able to build on that with the guys that they have coming up, even like Tamar Johnson, who we haven't mentioned, friend of the pod, like next year as the years go on, is it going to be this year when the timetable is or next year?
I'll agree. I think I was a little too harsh there with the Mets thing because they did battle a lot and the Pirates have looked good this year. But I think it's that same thing of they're not ready just yet. But in 2025, that rotation is led by Skeens, Jones, and Keller with Moore on the way and Tamar at second and Brian Reynolds and Cabrian Hayes and O'Neill Cruz. And they've proven sneaky that they're willing to add in free agency, whether it's a Carlos Santana, Rowdy Tellez, someone like that obviously isn't going to be a stud, but they're not spending nothing, give the Pirates credit. They got Aroldis Chapman, who thanks for blowing the game today. But they're willing to spend some money, which is weird to say of the Pirates' ownership. And I do think the Pirates are on the rise, but I don't think they're a playoff team. But David, it's not a big deal, but number four.
Tanner Scott should not be the closer of the Marlins right now.
That's a very niche one, as I pull up. I have not looked at the Tanner Scott stats yet this year.
Like, I know the Marlins have been bad, but he had a couple of opportunities to give them wins, and he's just been looking like, why is he even the closer? Like, his ERA looks terrible.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, the thing is, it's early. I think with him, again, you go through what you had last year and he looked great. Another thing you have to take into account is that AJ Puck's trying to get time into the rotation, a guy who was a key reliever piece for them last year. They're trying to put him into the rotation. So that's just one less arm that you're going to be able to have. But again, you alluded to it a little. I think a lot of it is just nothing's going right for the Marlins right now. They can't pitch. They can't hit. They can't do anything right. I mean, the highlight of their year has been Luis Arraez hitting a bob of Chris Sale that was 45 feet out of the strike zone and getting a hit on it. That's their big highlight of the year. So again, when that's your highlight of the year, you're just not a good baseball team. So I think Tanner Scott is more just like a product of the environment he's in. And again, I think that the Marlins this year have just been on the field and off the field, just an utter like circus. I think they've made wrong moves left and right since October, it seems like. And it really seems like they're wasting an opportunity where they had a season to build on, and they're really just letting that go to waste.
I think with Tanner Scott, it's the question of who else, because I don't know who they'd turn to in that bullpen. Friend of the podcast, Declan Cronin looked pretty good. Could be Anthony Bender, but he's on the IL. So once he's back, maybe it's going to be him. As you mentioned, AJ Puck is on starting rotation duty, and according to RotoWire, which is pretty good when it comes to tracking closers, they said Scott's job security might be hanging by a thread, and potentially the only thing keeping him in the ninth inning right now for the Marlins is that no one else in the bullpen has pitched particularly well either. So, situation to monitor, especially if you're a fantasy baseball player and who's going to get save opportunities for the Marlins. I would assume Scott gets a couple more, but interesting, and I do like the take, David, that it's probably going to be, if he blows another save or two, time for someone else to get the shot. But last but not least, it's not a big deal, but number five.
It's not a big deal, but another bad team I'm going to mention. Every single star player and veteran that is on the White Sox, they got to request a trade. They all want out of there. The White Sox are miserable. They're dog crap.
Oh, there's our one. But I think with the White Sox, and I think the reason I've been jumpy to answer these questions, because I never get to be the role of the analyst. I always get to like pose the question. But the problem with the White Sox, and Nico echo it, because besides from the jerseys, not much is going right with the White Sox. But the problem with the White Sox is that the stars aren't healthy ever. Luis Robert is hurt every single year. Eloy Jimenez is hurt every single year. Yoan Moncada is out until August. The other pieces of the core has been traded away, whether it's Nick Madrigal, Andrew Vaughn is disappointed, Jose Abreu is no longer on the team, Yasmani Grandal is no longer on the team, everyone that you associated with the Chicago White Sox. I don't know if you could name a starting pitcher for the White Sox since Chris Sale, and that was 7 years ago at this point, other than Lucas Giolito, but who's also that's with the Red Sox.
I mean, maybe just put it because I'm a side, like, I do this, I can name a couple, and that was actually
but
Crochet's look good. He's got like a 3.33 ERA. He's looked good, but Michael Kopech's had a couple like flashes, but again, it's a lot like you say, like it. They're worried. I really don't know where they go from here too, because it's not like their farm system is crazy.
No.
Like, and it's not very it's not like an Oriole situation where it's like, hey, they're bad, but look, we've got 75 top 100 prospects that are just going to come up in the next 3 years, and we're going to be phenomenal. It's like they've got Colson Montgomery, I believe, who's pretty good. But again, no one really sticks out to me in their organization. So it's like, again, like, what do you do? I mean, again, if you're Robert, I would agree. Like, you could request a trade.
But Robert's the problem.
He's hurt.
He's supposed to be their Julio Rodriguez, and he's just not.
When Julio Rodriguez hasn't been the Julio Rodriguez, but
last year.
Like, I mean, again, but he even had, like, the thing is, like, it's just that's been the whole thing with them. Like, they just haven't, they've been disappointments for, like, multiple reasons. Even when, like, they had their stretch, like, it was just disappointments, either underperformance, it's injuries, just every single person you turn to has underperformed for one reason or another. They've been, I don't want to say that they've been poorly ran, because I think they've built, they have been poorly ran, but I think a lot of it has just been like guys that we've all been expecting, we're expecting great things of, for one reason or another, haven't panned out. A lot of guys, like you said, were high on Andrew Vaughn, and it seems like a great move to calling him up and just give him time, hasn't panned out. A lot of guys were high on Michael Kopech, hasn't panned out. A lot of guys were high on Eloy and Luis Robert. They haven't been on the field. Like, there's just so many guys that you can point to that for one reason or another just hasn't panned out for them. And it's like, they had so many, like a lot of these moves, I was like cheering when they happened. I was like, yeah, Eloy, let's go get him up. Yeah, Crochet, I love that you drafted him and brought him in right immediately and let the guy just pitch and use his raw stuff. And it just seems like a lot of them haven't panned out.
I like it. I think it's the one thing they have going for them is that I don't think any of the, although the Tigers and the Royals are starting to build up something, that division seems like it's always attainable, whether you're going to go in on free agency or you're going to develop for like 2-3 years and then you come out on the other side. Maybe we've seen new GM Chris Getz, former big leaguer, in his first season there. So we'll see the direction that he takes that team in. But it's time for me to retake my co-hosting duties, and I will continue the rest of the day. David, you are feel free to continue to be an analyst for the rest of the show if you'd like to. And the first thing that I'd like to say is it's not a big deal, but the Marlins demoted Max Mayer. And I know we talked a little bit about the Marlins being a disappointment right now, but a second ago, but he was one of the surprising bright spots, and now he's down to AAA.
It's just been, it's again, like I was saying, it's questionable move over and questionable moves like just all around the Marlins, which really gets me upset. I don't get that move. I don't get the move that they did a few weeks ago of not giving Schumacher his option, avoiding his contract. Don't get that move. Again, letting go of their GM, a terrible move. Like, she was amazing. Like it's just every single move they've done since the season ended has been a question mark. I can't think of... Again, even I didn't even love the AJ Puck move of moving him to the rotation. It seemed like he found a good niche of being a great left-handed reliever, and they're like, hey, we're going to try him. Again, I just don't love any of the moves they're making. They have got a little bit of the injury bug with Edwin Cabrera, Yuri Perez, and Sandy Alcantara. But, like, again, just the moves they're making just seem like I don't get the rhyme or reason, especially with how depleted and how good he's looked. Like, why are you moving down the bright spot? I just don't understand it.
David, your thoughts, if any?
Yeah, I feel like that's the thing with the Marlins. Like, they have, like, when they have good pieces, and sometimes they just, it's just their ownership over the years. That's why they only made the postseason four times. won the World Series the first two times they made it. The last couple years, 2020, sure they made it, but that was the shortened year. This last year, they made the postseason, but then look at them now. I mean, they're going to be making moves, and of course, not all of them are going to be right. Like, why were they the only team to pretty much sign just one, like, the last team to sign anybody? Like, they're going to be question marks all around that organization, like, because they don't have a good ownership at all. Their yep. ownership is a question mark.
All right, I got one for you, Nico. This is going to be a rapid fire as we are approaching the end on time. So, Nico, I'm going to direct these at you. It's not a big deal, but 42 should be retired in college baseball as well as we sit here on Jackie Robinson Day.
I'd agree. I think he's done so much for the game, and he had a storied college career. I mean, UCLA, he was, I think, I don't know if he wore, again,
I don't think he wore, but
I can get on board with that.
How about, it's not a big deal, but Doc Gooden deserves more Hall of Fame consideration. He had his number retired by the New York Mets on Sunday, and I think the numbers are interesting. Obviously, he was on the trajectory to get there, and his career took a hard nosedive after probably 7-8 years with the Mets before. He ended up pitching, I believe, in 11 seasons total, but obviously some things happened that derailed that a little bit. But I do want to point out the peak. And I know we talk about in Major League Baseball, there's the whole, like, Hall of Fame, Hall of Very Good, how do you determine it? But I'm going to go off a 7-year period. In fact, sorry, I'll go an 8-year period for Doc Gooden, where he had a 2.99 ERA. He averaged 214 innings pitched. He had 21 complete game shutouts, including 60 complete games, let alone potentially the most dominant season in Major League Baseball history in 1985, where he had a 1.53, I'll repeat that, a 1.53 ERA in just casual 280 innings pitched that season. In, by the way, his first full season in the major leagues. This also came off the heels of his Rookie of the Year season, where he finished with a 2.6 ERA and 218 innings pitched and led Major League Baseball with 270 strikeouts and 276 strikeouts. ERA plus during that Cy Young year was 230. The FIP was 213. Just, like, talking about peak, because I know people are mentioning Johan Santana should be in the Hall of Fame or Don Mattingly should be in the Hall of Fame. There was a period in baseball where there was no one as dominant and no one you didn't want to face in the box more than Doc Gooden and the K-Corner and winning the 1986 World Series and a Rookie of the Year to the Cy Young to obviously some stuff later in his career that basically derailed his career numbers. He ended his career with a 3.5 ERA, but that is because after leaving the Mets 1996, every year after that, his ERA was well north of 3. In fact, it was well north of 4. The lowest in that time period was a 4.7. So the career numbers get a little shady. He ended his career with 194 wins, which I think if he got to that 200, sneaky, he's got a lot better shot because people care about the counting stats. But I know I just answered my own question, but does anyone have any thoughts on the Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, Triple Crown, 4-time All-Star, 2-time World Series, Silver Slugger, might I add, and ERA title winner, Dwight K. Gooden, Nico?
I'm going to push back a little because, yes, like, I do agree that there was a period where he was the last person you wanted to face, but I think the problem is it was too short. I think you do talk about that he had some years sprinkled in there that were good. I just took a look at his stats because I didn't want to just take the Mets fan Dylan Campion word for it. Again, especially when you look at, like, his peaks and stuff, I think that just – I'm one of those people, I'm not very big on allowing everyone into the Hall of Fame. I want the elite of the elite, and I think that – yes, he had that period, but I think it was just too short. I think that especially when you look at some of the years that he had after, even before he fell off, like, they weren't phenomenal. I think that he had a Hall of Fame season. Like, I would almost liken it to, you know how the UFC, I don't know if you're into UFC, Dylan, but the UFC, their Hall of Fame, they have a wing for, like, fights where it's like, yeah, this fight made the Hall of Fame. Like, I would see his season being a Hall of Fame season. I don't think he had a Hall of Fame career.
I definitely think it was worthy of, and I think Hall of Fame is another debate. I think it's very worthy that the Mets retired his number. I think that Doc and Daryl together made a lot of sense. That Doc is getting his term retired this year. Daryl's getting retired later in the summer. I don't like that Doc was shoved into the middle of April, because it seems like, why would you schedule a Hall of Fame announcement on a day that a lot of college kids who would probably go to the game with their dad, shout out dad, weren't able to do that because it wasn't summer. So weird to schedule it on a random rainy day in April when it's freezing cold in New York. But besides the point, great day. It was good ceremony and love to see it happening. I think you well deserve that number retirement for Doc Gooden. Hall of Fame is another story, but just wanted to throw that into the ethernet for everyone to think about. But any other closing thoughts as we approach the 40-minute mark on this long episode, as I'm getting shaking and nodding heads at almost midnight here on the East Coast? But we'll be back again, flexible week on the podcast, given that I was away in Indianapolis this weekend. Shout out Georgetown baseball. Hoyas have never been hotter in their life, but which means that the boys didn't really record an interview this weekend. So we're scrambling a little bit, but it's okay. We love to be transparent here. And the goal is that we will get you at least, we're going to get you guaranteed one more interview later this week, either Thursday or Friday. And then we might have a special episode out on Saturday. But if not, we will reset the clock, and next week we'll be back to our normal 3 episodes a week. I hope I didn't just jinx us, Nico. But anything else you would like to throw out there to finish up the episode?
No, good to go.
Awesome. Check out the new Cider Tired socials at Cider Tired Pod, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, LinkedIn. Have fun looking at those tan graphics right now. Not going to say what's happening, but I'm just saying, enjoy my amazing Google Slides tan and chalkboard. I don't know what the permanent marker, I think, is the
permanent marker, bro.
Enjoy the permanent marker with the tan background right now, because who knows if by the time you're listening to this or next week, you might be erasing the permanent marker. But for Dylan, Nico, thank you, David, so much for hopping on with us again. We appreciate, as always, all the time and the insight that you give us. Don't be a stranger. Come on whenever you'd like to join us. And we look forward to more hot takes throughout the season and the summer. But for Dylan, Nico, David, next time, Side Retired.